Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rahaguna Tata Pasanayati. Nasachyani Vipad Grihadva. Chandasa Navajavang Surya. Vinamahat Padavajo Bisakam. Nasiya chani vatatri hatyava. Nachanda sanai vachanikla surya. Vinamahat patavisho puksam. Uganatha pasanayati. Nasi javani vilan vichavam. Nachandasa naita chalangsarye. Vinamahat patavajo bisikam. Rahugana. Itat. Tapasa nayati na cha ijaya nivapanayat sanyasa grihat va na chandasa Naiva Jala Akni Surya Vina Mahat Padaraja Abhisikam. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Rahugana, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth. One cannot realize the absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, brahmacharya, strictly following the rules and regulations of householder life, leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyasa, or undergoing severe penances in winter by keeping oneself submerged in water, or surrounding oneself in summer by fire and the scorching heat of the sun. There are many other processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has obtained the mercy of a great devotee. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anybody by a pure devotee, Videsu Durlabam Adurbam Atmabhaktau, One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following the directions of the Vedas. One has to approach a pure devotee. Anyabhivasita asanyam yana karmadi anavartam. By the grace of such a devotee, one can understand the absolute truth. Krishna and one's relationship with him. A materialist person sometimes thinks that simply by executing pious activities and remaining at home, one can understand the absolute truth. That is denied in this verse. Nor can one understand the absolute truth simply by observing the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, celibacy. One only has to serve the pure devotee. That will help one understand the absolute truth without fail. So, this verse and the commentary is not just important. It talks about something absolutely essential and vital in spiritual life. There are many rules and regulations. There are many good pieces of advice that we can follow. There are many scriptures to study, from the Vedas, the writings of the Acharyas, writings of Prabhupada. And all of these things are very helpful and beneficial. However, if we want real pay dirt, if you want to get spiritual realization, if you want to experience that realization of the absolute truth, if you want to feel our own relationship with him, then we must go to a self-realized soul, to a devotee of the Lord. Now, it may take us many lifetimes before we get to that point. By the way, I want to mention, if I may, there was a very famous American author. His name was Mark Twain, and he wrote a couple of classics, American classics, Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. And he tells the story of his own experience when he went to church and they were giving a sermon. And he thought the sermon was wonderful. It was very inspiring. It was very good. But the sermon went on and on and on. And Mark Twain was thinking, I'm going to donate. When that charity box, the donation box comes around, I'm going to put in $50, U.S. dollars. But the guy went on, the sermon went on and on and on. And then he's thinking, Mark Twain, well, I won't put in $50, I'll put in $20. But then the sermon went on and on and on longer, and he said, well, I'm not going to put in $20, I'll put in $10. And the sermon went on and on and on. He said, okay, I'm only going to put in $1. Well, finally, the sermon ended. The collection plate was passed around after long, long talk. And then Mark Twain said he took $10 out of the plate. So I want to assure you that I won't be going on and on and on. I don't want anybody to take money out of the collection plate because I went on too long. I will try to keep it short and to the point. But what this verse and commentary makes clear is that one of the most essential things is association of devotees, and of course, the higher the level of the devotee, the greater is the benefit. We don't have to have too many details about that. Just the association If you think for a moment, if you have a piece of iron and you put another piece of iron close to it, nothing is really going to happen. But if you have a magnet and you put a piece of iron next to that, that second piece of iron becomes magnetized. So just by the presence of a great devotee, one gets the vibrations, one gets the spiritual benefits. And this is one of the reasons that association is so very, very important. The higher the level of the devotees that we associate with, the greater will be the benefit. The greater will be our spiritual benefit. We should respect all devotees, because they have dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy name, towards the serving of the Lord. They have cut away from all material activities, the things that the world is saying is so wonderful and so important. In the United States, they judge you pretty much by two things: your house and your automobile. If you own a big house and a new car of a high end, then you're a big success. And if you're driving a second-hand car and you live in a shabby house, you didn't make it in America. You know, you're a loser, like that. So, but that is not the way of spiritual life. The measure of success comes, we can feel within as we are associating with higher level devotees. Even when that feeling of improvement and advancement comes, we should be super cautious about that. Because the danger is pridefulness. And with pridefulness, that can be totally devastating for our spiritual life. The key to the chanting of the holy name, we've heard over and over and over again. But it's easy to hear it, but how easy is it to practice? Are we humbler than the straw in the street? Are we humbler than the straw in the street? Do we let anybody walk on us without complaint? Do we offer all respects to others and expect none in return, like that? But this is the formula for actual success in spiritual life, for actually chanting the holy name. His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said that he would teach that the person who comes and compliments us, he is our worst enemy. And the person who insults us, he's our best friend. Because it's humility, humility, humility. Oh, I'm a great devotee. Oh, I'm really wonderful, like that. And this will bring devastation to serious chanting. What is meant by serious chanting? So many devotees are quite satisfied that Prabhupada taught, chant 16 rounds every day. Well, Prabhupada did teach to chant 16 rounds every day. But that was a minimum. That was a minimum. If we go and read room conversations of Prabhupada, hear his talks, read all of his writings, we'll see what really the goal was: to always to always chant the holy name. And a person may wonder, well, how is that? And Prabhupada's own guru, Bhaktisiddhanta, he did not have 16 rounds as a minimum. He had 64 rounds as a minimum. And for those that study the art of mantras, and or the science of mantras, they'll find that certain mantras have a certain number of recitations to get their full realization. Om Namo Shivaya. There's a certain number of recitations in order to get the full benefit of reciting Om Namo Shivaya. And our Maha Mantra. Well, if you tell a devotee, T-Mac, 300,000 names a day, it's only 192 rounds. He's going to look at you like you're a lunatic. He's not going to want to hear anything more about it. But the truth of the matter is, anybody and everybody sitting in this room here today can chant 192 rounds, 300,000 names every day. The key to it, and you say, oh, you're kidding. You know, I have trouble. You know, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I haven't finished my 16 rounds. What are you talking, all this crazy talk, 192 rounds? What's the matter with you? But everybody in this room can chant 192. And actually, that is really intended as the minimum number of rounds for the Maha Mantra. Well, how do you do it? Well, just the same thing that we've heard over and over and over again. Be humbler than the straw in the street. If you get up in the morning, nobody's around, and you offer your full prostrations, the very first thing in the morning, to the Lord, and start chanting immediately, the name will start coming of its own. You don't have to go chasing after the name. The name will come to you and dance on your tongue. Every once in a while, it doesn't happen very often, it hasn't happened very often in my lifetime, but every once in a while I practice what I preach. Almost unheard of for me. But I do remember the very first I experienced with some large number of rounds coming. And I'd gotten up fairly early in the morning, and I was using my counter beads, and it got to be about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. I was living outside the temple at that moment, and I had chanted, I looked and I couldn't believe it, 128 rounds by 5 o'clock in the morning. And so it became pretty easy then to finish up and do the 3 lakh, the 192 rounds, which we're taught is the minimum for proper chanting of the Maha Mantra. So again, humility, humility, humility is the key to chanting the holy name. There's a problem with that, however. It is a correct statement. The problem with that is this. The acharyas teach that humility is such a precious spiritual quality. If you have humility, all the other good qualities come after it. You get that and all the other good things come to you. But the problem is, it's so precious, we can't do it on our own. Humility, true humility, is a gift from Krishna. It is a gift from God. He alone can send us true humility. But we have an expression in the USA. I don't know if you have heard it here in India, but it goes, fake it till you make it. Fake it till you make it. So you can fake humility, you can pretend, you can offer your prostrations on the floor when nobody's around. You can offer your prostrations to anybody and everybody, complete stranger. And they may think you're kind of nutty, they may think you belong in the mental hospital or something like that. But you'll find if you do that, strive for humility, pray for the gift of humility, you'll find that's when the rounds start coming in serious numbers. That's when you have hope of achieving Teen Lap, 300,000 names in a day. And it's quite amazing that you not only can get them done, you can get them done by like 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, Prabhupada, so yes, he did say 16 rounds. But he also said, I want my devotees, disciples, to always chant the holy name. But since they can't do that, I give them 16 rounds to get started like that. So, but we can experience that. We can try it out ourselves when nobody is ready to laugh at us in the privacy of our own room. Just do a full prostration and chant the holy name. And you'll feel the name starts coming to you. You don't go after the name. The name comes to you and it's dancing on your tongue. The bliss of the holy name is beyond description. If we study technically, what most of us are chanting is called Nambasa, the shadow of the holy name. It's not the pure holy name, because the true holy name is non-different from Krishna. So we have the shadow of the holy name. If I can share a personal experience, maybe I shouldn't tell it, but if it will help somebody, I will take that chance. I tried to practice what I preach. I was constantly chanting the holy name. And you know, it isn't just that you can chant the name on the beads out loud. You can chant them within the mind. You can chant within the heart. And so I tried to be constantly, every day, every moment of the day, no matter where I was, to be chanting. It's nice to be in a wonderful atmosphere like this sublime temple with a wonderful devotional atmosphere. But if you're someplace else outside, you can still be chanting the holy name. And I remember I was back in the USA at that time, and I was walking down a busy street. It wasn't a temple experience. It wasn't a secluded place in the woods. It wasn't a very auspicious time of day, the Brahma Murti, the hour before sunrise. It was the middle of the day. And traffic was going along the street. Horns were honking like that. But I was chanting the holy name anyway within the heart. And I'll always remember that experience. I became, while I was walking along, minding my own business, chanting within, I got hit by bliss. The bliss filled my head. It was divine light, white. And the bliss was weighing me down. And the bliss spread through my whole body, down, down, down. From the top of my head down to my feet, I was bathed in bliss, this light. So heavy, I couldn't stand up. I was being pushed to the ground by bliss. So finally, and here I am on the sidewalk in the busy street, people are saying, what's the matter with this guy? You know, is something in his brain wrong or what? But there I was pushed to the ground by bliss. And so within my mind, I picked up two handfuls of dirt. And I said to the Lord Krishna, back away with your bliss. I can't handle it all. I can't handle it all like that. So I was able to stand up and then to move along. But the point is that the holy name is when we are practicing the real holy name, when we go from Nambasa, the shadow of the holy name, to the pure holy name, that's when we experience bliss beyond belief. And as we know, one of the symptoms of spiritual progress is tears are coming from the eye. And most yogis know this, they're aware of it. I remember when I was in Rishikesh, there was one yogi there, he was trying to impress everybody with how holy, holy, holy he was, how he was a big advanced yogi like that. And what he did, he took onion, little tiny pieces of onion, and he put it into his nostrils. And as a result of that, tears started coming to his eyes, so he could show off, see, I'm crying for the Lord now. But he was crying because of the onion that was in there. Actually, one of the biological facts of the human body in relation to our emotions is that the tears can come from two parts of the eyes. There are tears of sadness. And if we see a little baby being scolded by his mommy or his daddy and he starts crying, and sometimes even adults have tragedy in their lives and they are crying, there are tears. The tears come from the inside of the eye, the inner part of the eye, and they are hot and they are salty. But when we have tears of bliss, tears of ecstasy, then the tears come from the outside of the eye, the outer part of the eye, and they are cool and they are sweet. They are tears of joy, tears of happiness, like that. And as we get more and more into the practice of the holy name, we will actually experience this. It isn't something we'll read about in the book. These are experiences that anybody and everybody in this room can have. What is the secret? Humble, humble, humble. Fake it till you make it. Fake the humility. But when you're down on the floor with a full prostration, chanting of the holy name becomes very easy. The holy name comes and comes, and stay with that constant chanting of the holy name. And Prabhupada himself said, I want all of my devotees to always chant the holy name. But since they can't do that, I give them 16 rounds. And in fact, his own guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saranya, well, His Holiness, he had a minimum number of rounds for his disciples, 64 rounds a day. So if you talk to today's devotees sometimes, you say, 64 rounds? Come on, like that. I have trouble finishing my 16. Well, humble, humble, humble. Go where nobody will laugh at you. Go in privacy, do prostrations. And you'll find that the names start coming on their own. The other thing, of course, a very important item in our spiritual life. There's all kinds of rules and regulations, all kinds of advice, books full of them, like that. But some of them are absolutely essential, that are really key to our getting anywhere in our spiritual life. And one of the most important is association. To keep the association of devotees. I have to say I've been to many temples in different parts of the world, and this temple is sublime. It has so many nice devotees here. The program is so nice. Everything. You look at the architecture and you say, wow. And then you see the devotees and meet how sincere and dedicated they are, and that's even far more important than the architecture. There is another essential point that every devotee should be aware of in spiritual life, and there's a tremendous urgency about being aware of that, and that is the power of aparadh, Vaishnav aparadh, offending a devotee, and how we must very carefully guard against committing Vaishnav aparadh. The Shastras say, even if a devotee is on the level of Lord Shiva, a big high-flying devotee, and he commits Vaishnav aparadh, he offends a devotee, he will fall down. It breaks my heart through the years I have seen it. Some really wonderful devotees, so sublime, unbelievably pure, unbelievably dedicated, and so advanced. They can give classes, they can teach in so many ways, and all of a sudden, nosedive. They go all the way down. They're back into material life in the grossest possible way. And what is the cause? We can examine over and over again, but we'll find almost invariably the same reason. It's Vaishnav aparadh. I remember one devotee, I won't mention his name. Of course, I think that might be Vaishnav aparadh if I mention it, speaking bad about a devotee. But he was a sublime devotee, and he was also brilliant. He was not just brilliant, he was super brilliant. Some of us, we know 2 languages, 5 languages. He spoke 21 languages, and he spoke them fluently. He would go down to Mexico, and he would speak Spanish just like a native. You couldn't, there was no trace of an accent like that. But that curse hit him, and I remember he spoke very badly about some devotee, and the nature of Vaishnav aparadh is if you commit it once, you speak bad against another devotee, you speak it once, it becomes easier to do it a second time about that same devotee or about another one, and it has a snowballing effect. It builds and builds. And I can remember, he was so nice and so pure and so intelligent, but there was I was afraid to be around him because he had gotten into that Vaishnav aparadh. And one of the natures of Vaishnav aparadh that every devotee should be aware of is, he said, there are certain essentials of spiritual life. The most important ones are very few in number. But avoiding Vaishnav aparadh is one of them. And what happens once you speak badly about a devotee? It builds, and you do it more and more often. You say worse and worse things. And it's not only a catastrophe, a disaster, to speak Vaishnav aparadh, but to hear it. The one who speaks and the one who hear it is affected. So if somebody is doing this Vaishnav aparadh, you have to avoid his association. Um, There's another point. Perhaps it's not so major for spiritual life, but since devotees are very kind and very compassionate, the story is told of a father who is trying to train up his son to be a good person, ethical, and to live properly. And so what he had his son do, they had a hammer and a bunch of nails. And so he says to his son, okay, I want you to take this hammer and these nails and put them into this wooden fence. So the son does what his father tells him, and he takes the hammer and nails and he puts in 30 nails in the wooden fence. The father said, good, you did very good. Now, I want you to take out all of the nails. He just put them in, but the son listens to his father and he pulls out all of the nails. So now all 30 nails are out. Now the father says, I want you to look at that wooden fence. You put the nails in, you took the nails out, but the holes that the nails made are still there in the fence. You can see them. They're all still there. Now, if you offend a person, if you insult him, even accidentally, and you go, you beg his forgiveness. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that. It just came out by accident. I didn't intend to say anything like that. Will you please forgive me? Okay, I forgive you. You're forgiven like that. So you think everything is clear. But actually, within, the person may be experiencing terrible pain from the offensive thing that was said about him. Just like the nails that had the holes in the fence, the holes are still there. So the insult, even if it's forgiven, it's still inside the person, and it can still hurt for a long time afterwards. Now, the one of the things about chanting, and one of the great blessings of this temple and the devotees who are here, is that we have the benefit of the most powerful tool, virtually the most powerful tool, Shrivanam, hearing. Because by hearing, when the devotees are together chanting the holy name, we hear, and we get tremendous spiritual benefit by just hearing the holy name. Hearing is such an important element in our spiritual life. There's an ancient scripture called the Book of Damages. And what the Book of Damages does, it isn't necessary for a devotee to go out researching it and studying it, because we have our basic literature, our Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. But anyway, in the Book of Damages, it has some interesting information, interesting points to be made. And what the Book of Damages is concerned with, if you injure a person, if you offend a person, if you hurt a person, well, what should you do about it? If some impulse, you're trying to be honest, you're trying to be truthful, but you see on this devotee's desk, there's a few hundred rupee notes, and you say, well, I'll just take one of those. And you walk off, you steal it, you go away. Well, that is an offense. And if you go back and say, gee, I'm sorry, I took this money, please, here it is, I'm returning it to you. So that's, you know, that can be accomplished. But the greatest damage that can be done is when we lose our hearing, Shrivanam. because it's so essential for the chanting of the holy name. It's so essential for a group chanting. So this book of damages says, well, what do you have to pay? What's the penalty if you cause a person to lose their hearing? You pay them, you know, a year's salary. You pay them 10 years' salary. How much? What is the damages that you have to compensate for if you caused a person to lose their hearing? And this ancient book says you have to compensate him the same as if you took a person's life. As if you took a person's life. In a family, if you kill one family member, you have to compensate the family for a life that was taken. But the point is, how important is hearing? They're saying, if you cause a person to lose their hearing, then you have to compensate as if you had taken a life. So the most important point for us here is to be aware of how valuable is Shrivanam. This is our first principle. We're told Shrivanam Kirtanam, you know. It's our first, but we should try to be conscious that hearing is so important. Now there's one or two other small points. We talked a little bit about association and how urgent is association. We need other devotees. We should not try to go it alone like that. There is nothing. If you go to, I was telling some outsider about, if you come here to this temple and you go to Mangal Artik or you go to Gur Artik and you see how wonderful it is with the association, when all the devotees are chanting the holy name together, it's overpowering, you know, it's overwhelming. The association is very important, but it's also true that there are times when it's important to be alone. Yes, we want to be with the other devotees, we want to chant with the other devotees, but at the end of the day, somewhere, we are trying to build our personal relationship with Krishna, our personal relationship with the Lord. And to do that, we want to be alone. There's kind of a ancient formula that might be applied, and we start with the association of devotees. We start going to the kirtans. We start going to artiks because it's so powerful. There's nothing that can replace it. It's so really great. And the benefit that we get, we take within us. We take within us. But then we can go alone, and we practice chanting alone to build our personal relationship with Krishna, with God. Finally, we want that personal relationship with Krishna. So there is going back and forth. We learn from the crowd and take that within. When we're alone, we have inner realizations. We have actual experiences within, and we can take that and share that with the group, with the association. And so we can go back and forth between being alone and being together. Maybe we can pause there for any questions. Does somebody have some questions? Well, if there are, oh yes, please.
Through meditation on Krishna, One realizes Paramatma realization, right?
Yes.
So in Satyoga, the meditation was only practiced.
The meditation is
in Satyoga.
The jiva, okay.
In Satyoga, meditation was practiced.
Okay.
So at that time they could only have Paramatma realization and no Bhagavan realization. In Satyoga, only people used to practice meditation.
Yeah, we practice meditation. Right?
But by meditation, we are told that only one can get Paramatma realization,
okay,
and not Bhagavan realization. Because in meditation there is no devotional service, only concentrating on Vishnu at our heart. So in Satyoga, everybody used to have only Paramatma realization?
Well, you're right. There are many forms of meditation, but always, the ultimate, most powerful form of meditation is upon the chanting of the holy name. Now, as far as realization of Krishna, Paramatma, Jiva, Atma, like that, we can be a very sincere and dedicated devotee, but the fact of the matter is, it's not according to the intensity of our practice or of our desire. It's by the will of Krishna alone. He will come if and when he wants to come, and he will come in what form that he himself desires. Now, he likes to accommodate his devotees. I mean, it's true that being a devotee, you increase your probabilities enormously. But still, he comes when he wants and to whom he wants. I might mention that we should try to increase the quality and the quantity of our devotional practice. A person can say, you know, I've been a devotee for 40 years. I have 40 years of experience as a devotee. 40 years of experience as a devotee. But the truth of the matter is, he's only had 1 year of experience 40 times over. He never went beyond 1 year of experience like that. So, but still, ultimately, even that understood, it is by his sweet will alone, by Krishna's will. We can do our best, we can be our sincere, we can pour out our heart, and we should. But ultimately, it's his decision. Does that help?
Okay, thank you.
You said that true humility develops by the grace of the Lord. In what ways does the Lord manifest this grace? You said that true humility develops by the grace of the Lord. In what ways does the Lord manifest that grace?
I'm not trying to be prejudiced here in saying that I prefer questions from the brahmacharis than from the women. My only reason for saying that is they're closer and I can hear them more easily, and you're at a distance, so I'm really having trouble to hear your question. Could you hear? Yes.
So how does it manifest?
Saying that true humility comes from the Lord, and how does this humility manifest? If we read some of the writings of the Goswamis, some of the Goswami literature, and they are writing some reference to themselves. I remember I read some of that. I couldn't believe it. I was overwhelmed. They're talking about how low they are, you know, lower than dirt. Nothing more objectionable, horrible, something like that. And these are the Goswamis talking like that. And I'm thinking, my word, you know, how can I ever sincerely come to that level of this feeling and sentiment? How can I really say, oh, I'm lower than the dirt in the street? I mean, I try to be humble, but I'm not that humble. So, but they're writing it, and they're very sincere. These are the Goswamis, and they're saying lower than that. I mean, when I read those descriptions, it just boggled the mind. And then later on, I did come to understand that the only way that can come about is because the Lord Krishna sent them this gift of humility. Humility is such a precious gift, our most precious spiritual gift. Because if we have humility, all the other good qualities come following after it. But it's so precious, the only way it comes is if Krishna sends it to us. We can't earn it, we can't work for it. We can fake it, and we should, fake it till you make it. We should try anyway. But again, Krishna responsible for sending this sublime gift. And then when it's there, it manifests in anything and everything we do, but sincerely. Oh, you go ahead of me. Oh, you sit in this chair in front of me. I mean, little details or big things like that. It manifests in all of our behavior like that. A person like you are really humble, he would say, well, I'm not good enough to give a class in Srimad Bhagavatam. But that's if you're really humble enough. But obviously there's some of us like me, you know. No, it manifests in everything we do like that. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Unless we smear our body with the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee, we may not get his mercy. So how do we actually go about, exactly the meaning of smearing our body with the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee? Is it we have to follow in letter or we have to follow in spirit?
Actually, both. Both are helpful. And some people, including myself, who are a little lazy, that's the kindest word I could think of, we can try, actually get the dust of the devotee's feet and spread it not just on our head, that's the lazy way, but to put it all over our body. And this is recommended by the acharyas, the dust of the feet. But also, it can also be used as a metaphor, because they may not be there presently, you know, in our presence, but we can take the dust of their feet by thinking of them humbly, by thinking of them humbly. Does that help at all?
Okay. Hare Krishna, in this Juhu Mandir, in Juhu Temple, Prabhupada Ji was walking here, in the temple, means actually walking here, and we are paying repeated obeisance in this temple. So does that amount to smearing our body with the lotus feet of, the dust of the lotus feet of Prabhupada Ji?
Well, I think since Prabhupada left the planet in 1977, that's more than 40 years. I think occasionally in that 40 years, somebody cleaned the temple. They washed the floor. Mm-hmm. Maybe once or twice only. So there may be some of the original dust left. But I think there's a real chance that all the original dust is gone. So we can do metaphorically to take the dust. We have the deity form there, and I notice some devotees, they touch his feet like that and put it to their head. And so if that sentiment within the heart, I think that can be quite beneficial, yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.